Sinn.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, where the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Good morning. Great to see you, Thumper. Thank you for putting that on. And
you bet, Dan.
We've got a great program today. I have a very, very special guest, a lady who I have the utmost respect for, and we're going to be talking about a subject. I your lead in on the last show is perfect, because we seem to be pitting everyone against one another. And it's not us. And that's why I sent out the announcement I did. Public enemy number one. And I thought Pogo was a perfect graphic for that. We have met the enemy and he is us. And the fact is that we have a group of people standing in the background that are fomenting hatred at every level and trying to get us to despise one another, when in fact, our culture right now is in the best position in the world to actually throw these chains off and become part of the solution, and understand that we as mankind have a very, very important role. We as mankind, or womankind as the case may be, Cynthia, we have a role to try to bring civility and honesty and integrity and truth and justice back to the world, because right now we don't have it. We've got the biggest mess in the world, and frankly, unless we're the solution, I don't see anything being the solution other than us. And with that, I want to introduce Cynthia, although I think just about probably all of our listeners know who Cynthia is. But she is she's retired from Congress now, but she was a six-term Congresswoman. She's a PhD. She teaches political science. She is someone who had the guts to stand up and tell the truth when nobody else seemed to have that intestinal fortitude. I absolutely admired her from the first time I saw her testimony talking to Donald Rumsfeld about where all this money went. She's a 9/11 truther. Just as I'm a 9/11 truther, because I'm also a Class A unlimited builder, and I understand how structures work, and they don't just fall down. If they did that, they would have redesigned the entire international building code, and we would see things built entirely different than they are today. The fact is, they didn't come down on their own, the Twin Towers, and certainly Building 7, if they needed other proof. Building 7 is about as good as it gets. So, Cynthia, I have to tell you, it's great to see you. I know you traveled late, and you got into Los Angeles at 2 in the morning, and so I really appreciate you being here. Thank you for joining us, and I'd love to get your part in starting this conversation. Oh, you need to unmute.
Yeah, that's right.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Great to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you too, Dan. And we kind of have dual purposes here today, because I've been commissioned to do a kind of truth-telling video about election integrity. Mm-hmm. And so I want to ask you, either now or later, that doesn't matter, but I just have one question on that regard, and that is, what is your view of an election that has integrity? I mean, you know, how does that look? What does that look like? So at some point, I'd like for us to discuss that. But oh, yeah. I have a few more pressing questions right now, because that music that you played, or that Thumper played, was absolutely beautiful. But, mm-hmm. and of course, I've heard that song when Trump used to would speak. He would play that song, but I don't know who those artists are, the singers and the musicians. What's the name of that band?
Actually, and Thumper can allude to that, but it's a combination. It's a combination of civilian and military group singing together. It's part of the Army, and I think there's even some Air Force.
Well, it's actually the Air Force singing sergeants are the people that you saw in uniform there, and the other individuals on that particular rendition were brought together for that specific production. I'm not sure if they are part of Lee Greenwood's regular entourage that sings for him. I got the impression that they had worked with Lee Greenwood before, but it was actually the singing sergeants from the United States Air Force.
Okay, well, they certainly do sing. They sing well, too.
They did a beautiful job, don't they?
Yes. Yeah, that's my new theme song. Thumper's been starting that before every one of my programs, because I think it's important that we realize just how lucky we are to live in this wonderful country. And if it wasn't for all these scumbags that seem to think they need to lead the American people around by the nose and destroy everything that's essentially beautiful about this country. And I know you're a staunch constitutionalist, and I absolutely yes. love that about you. So all I can say is that it's going to be important for people like you, like Thumper, like myself, people to stand up and be counted. And everybody says, well, aren't you afraid of what's going on right now? No, actually, I think we are very, very fortunate to be alive in this time, because we can finally stand up and confront these evil people who are trying to destroy everything we believe in.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that we are having this discussion now, because I have a friend who actually lives in Malaysia, but he was the chief of staff to the former prime minister, and he and I communicate regularly. He has been, in fact, what happens a lot of times is that people who are outside of the United States pay more attention to what's mm-hmm. happening inside the United States than people inside the United States, than Absolutely. U.S. citizens. And so he was giving me some information, some books to read. Just yesterday, I was reading his message before I got on the plane. And so I said, okay, now I've got two more books that I've got to read. But you know, here's the thing, Dan, we're not the first people who have tried to fight this evil. And evil is exactly what it is. This is an evil that has been around for a very long time. It was other places, and we didn't realize that we needed to stop it in those other places. Now it has come home to the United States. And I honestly believe that we, let me just say, maybe it was 25 years ago when I said that with the advance of technology and the technology of control, we'd better act now to secure our freedom Because if we don't act now, because the other guys, the bad guys, control the technology, we won't be able to fight back. We'll be like, I guess it's Neo and the Matrix, and you know, it'll be a whole different kind of a fight that many of us will have to learn the tools to use in order to secure our freedom and our liberty. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the hour is nigh for a real fight. The time is dire. And if we don't move rather swiftly, what we talk about freedom and liberty, it's not gonna exist for us. I see the change just happening too rapidly, and the mechanisms of control are just there. They've been implanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, technocracy, and we've done a number of programs on that, but the technocracy, the technology's there now to control all of humanity and frankly to destroy most of humanity. And you and I know that's their ultimate goal, is to reduce the world's population by a radical amount. I'm talking 93%. They say that we need much fewer than a billion people on Earth, and that's a scary thought. I would love to see them be the first to go. Then maybe the other 7.5 billion of us could live in peace.
We could live in peace.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I you know, it's what you're saying is absolutely true. We are now at a stage in our world history, and all these people from around the world, and I have friends all over the world that contact me at various points and tell me, what in the world is going on? Why are you people allowing this to happen? Don't you realize you're the last best hope for the world? And we really are, but we've allowed ourselves to be controlled by very, very bad people for a very long time. And I know you're kind of like I am. I am about as much as I detest the Clintons and the Obamas and all the rest, I hate the Bushes even more, because they were the ones that tried to convince everybody that they were patriots, when in fact, there's nobody in the world any more globalist and evil than the Bush family. And
you're absolutely right on that. And, you know, I don't know if Thumper can pull up a photo of the Georgia Guidestones, but whenever I have a friend who visits, you know, a lot of people don't travel to the South because, you know, the South is still stigmatized in many ways. And so New York and Los Angeles are much more alluring, or if you have vice on your mind, then maybe Las Vegas. But, you know, people don't readily choose to come down South. But it whenever anyone visits me in Georgia, I take them to see the Georgia Guidestones, because that was put there for a reason. Mm-hmm. We don't know who did it, but it's an awfully expensive message. And like I have said for a very long time, if they were dumb enough to write it down, we need to be smart enough to read it. And mm-hmm. So the Georgia Guidestones, we need to read and understand that this was somebody's project, and it's a message to humanity that we need to understand.
Absolutely. And I think it's been attributed to Ted Turner, and I think certainly we can't say that's the case absolutely, but I think there's fairly sound evidence, because he's been one of the big globalists for a very long time. And I think, anyway, you're right. I've been to the Georgia Guidestones, and all I can tell you is that all of humanity should see what they plan for us, because it lists it very, very carefully. And obviously, a huge reduction in human population is part of that plan.
That's right. And so now what we're seeing with SARS coronavirus 2, people talk about COVID-19, and I like to talk about SARS coronavirus 2 as opposed to the disease. I like to talk about the virus itself, But what we are seeing is that our bloodstream has become a battlefield. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to understand, that people are now, I mean, this is not the first time, but this is, we've got a concerted effort. Oh, wait a minute. What? When was that picture taken? Because I was up there last year, and it wasn't defaced like that.
This is coming from the Wikipedia site, and I'm just kind of flicking through some of the pictures of it here.
Uh-huh. Whoa. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you what, if you're going to deface or put graffiti on anything, I think that's about the best candidate I can think of.
Yeah, but I want the message to shine through. I want people to actually be able to read it. I don't want to read the graffiti. But anyway, that goes into the whole matter of destruction of monuments and things like that. Yeah. I just had a conversation with a gentleman yesterday who called me because he wanted some help in destroying the Georgia monument, of course, to the Confederacy. Of course, we have many of them, and I'm not so in favor of that. What I am more in favor of is amending the narratives to include the people who were victimized in the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. Let's have we have Confederate memorials, several of them in Georgia, and let's just have a change of narrative. Let's have a convention where we decide on the language for the new narrative, and we decide together as a community, rather than having messages imposed on us.
Right.
And so you see, it's the imposition of the message. When I was teaching actively during that time that I was in Bangladesh, one of the most difficult things that I had to grapple with the questions from my students was, where does the McKinney come from? Because you can look at me and say that I am neither Irish nor a Scots person, and yet I have that name. So where did that name come from? And it comes from the whole history of my ancestors and their relationship to the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to destroy that history. While some people are trying to destroy the history, I would like my narrative to be included in that history. Mm-hmm. And not just, you know, Black History Month. I want that narrative to become a part of the narrative of my home state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And so history for one is, it's supposed to be history for all. So this rush to destroy monuments and to, you know, that, even that defacement, I now I've got to go back up there. It's, you know, probably a little ride for me, but I don't mind it. I'll get a car and I'll just go up there, and I'm going to check it out and see if it's been defaced. And if it has been defaced, if what can be done to erase the defacement. I don't want to erase the message, because people need to understand that there are some people who are inside this country who hate the people of this country. Mm-hmm. And they will do anything to erase us, not just this country, because that's a global message. When you're talking about limiting population to 1 billion people, and you've got 6.5 or 7 billion people on the planet, that affects the whole world. And the whole world needs to be aware of that, that this is the case. Now, you've got a few in the area of, or on the area of SARS coronavirus too, you've got a few African heads of state who have come out and talked about the bribes that they were offered in Mauritius, the bribes that were offered, was it Madagascar? I can't remember now, to accept the vaccinations. And They said, no, we've got our own home remedy and it works. Let us use that. But there's this imposition to try and inject something into your bloodstream and you don't even know what it is. We don't have the right, at least on social media, to ask, what are the ingredients? To inquire, what are the human effects that will result if I allow this injection into my body? Well, they don't have an answer because they didn't do human trials in the first place. It's an experiment. And if you go to the FDA website, as I have done, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration website, what you will find plastered at the very top is the message that this is an experiment. This is not an FDA approved drug treatment. Well, even if it were FDA approved, I look at all of the FDA approved drugs that are on the market that have been allowed to get on the market. And I wonder, where's the FDA? Because these drugs have side effects that are killing people, prompting people to commit suicide and all of that. And that's supposed to be considered normal. Well, it's not normal. And we have a government that is completely, totally abdicated any responsibility for the people of the United States, which is the only reason that we have a government in the first place. You and I come together from interesting vantage points because I can stand with you, but I come from the extreme left. You call me a revolutionary and I say, thank you very much. I'm a revolutionary. I'm a radical. When you talk to me about problems, I'm radical enough to want to go wherever the truth takes us, and then let's deal with solutions that eradicate the disease that we're trying to cure. And so I'm a revolutionary, I'm radical. Don't call me a conservative, don't call me right wing, because I'm not there. However, I can join with you and we can, if you consider yourself to be a conservative, but I mean, and I don't mean you, I mean, I can join with people who consider themselves to be the polar opposite of me, as long as we are defining what the problems are and are ready to work together to produce acceptable solutions. Those solutions that are acceptable to me and at the same time that are acceptable to you are the solutions that are the strongest and standing on the firmest foundation.
Absolutely. Well, that's you're a truth seeker. So am I. And, you know, we put too many labels on people. You know, the fact is I'm a classical liberal, which was what a lot of our founding fathers were. They were classical liberals. And that is understanding the idea that individuals should have liberty. God didn't create us to be slaves for other people. And we've all been enslaved. This is the thing that people don't realize. We've all been enslaved. And we've been enslaved by people who they could care less. They use every trick in the book to try to get us to I call it slicing and dicing. They try to get us to fight one another. They try to get us to hate one another, when in fact we should be loving one another, because we're just looking for the truth. We're classical liberals. You're a classical liberal, Cynthia, just like I am.
Well, you know, we are looking for the truth, and we do have a set of, what can I say, social guidelines that are being imposed on us. At one point, it was called identity politics. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I went to Red Pill Expo, that's kind of what I got into, was the origins. And the last time you and I were together on your show, we talked about the origins of this identity politics, again, imposed by others who didn't share in the identity politics. What they wanted to do and what they successfully did was impose the identity politics on the population minus themselves so that they could then foment trouble among those various groups within the population. And that's what has happened. Mm-hmm. We have to be smarter.
Oh, we have to be much smarter. And your comments about history, you're absolutely right. The last thing we should want to do is destroy any of our history or destroy any of our monuments. But there's a lesson to be learned from everything we've done in the past. It is, I'm not sure, I don't remember who's credited with saying this, but if we don't learn lessons from our history, we're bound to repeat them.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Go ahead. Anyway.
Well, you're absolutely right. And if Thumper could help us by pulling up Stone Mountain, which is a very, you know, I'm from mm-hmm. Georgia, so my references are going to be.
That's a beautiful monument. I tell you, I love it. Yeah. And they're trying to get rid of that, huh?
Yes. And that's what I wanted. That's exactly what I want to talk about. So, for example, the gentleman that I was speaking with yesterday called me because he's concerned about Stone Mountain. So I asked him to clarify for me what exactly the objective is. There's some legislation now pending in the Georgia legislature with respect to Stone Mountain. And so I wanted to, it's a resort place now, yes. And so you can have conventions there. You can go camping there, as I have done. You can go camping there. When I was a child, it was one of the many Confederate memorials in metropolitan Atlanta that as a school kid, you know, it was a class visit. Mm-hmm. And when I went there the very first time, I have to tell you that I was brought to tears because it was a celebration of the enslavement of the Africans brought to Georgia. And you went into the museum store, and there the store had all of the mammy dolls and the lawn jockey and, you know, all of the denigrating images of Blacks that we know so well. And I left there crying. And so it sort of seared an indelible impression in my mind. This is what Stone Mountain is celebrating, and it's celebrating my subjugation. Well, okay. Well, then various changes. Seems like we ought to be able to get the front of it.
Yeah. Just look for Stone Mountain Monument, Thumper.
Yeah.
That should get it, the mountain monument, because it's carved right into the mountain, right over the river there at Chattanooga.
Yeah, I think maybe Wikipedia might be our best bet.
Yeah, I hate to turn to Wikipedia for anything.
Or under images?
All images, right up above. All images.
See, images? No, at the top.
Yeah,
at the
more top. Images. Okay, there we go.
Right up under Stone Mountain.
There
we go. Bingo.
Okay. So, and there was a period in the history of my state where not only was the Confederacy celebrated in the memorial of Stone Mountain, but before it became a memorial, it was an active site of Ku Klux Klan meetings, as you can scroll down and you can see. It was the place at the top where the crosses were burned, and the Klan members met regularly in their regalia. And if you could scroll up so that we can see.
Let's scroll through some of these photos here.
Yeah. Yeah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's the cross burning and the Klan in their regalia. And that was a regular scene. Stone Mountain was the head of the Georgia Ku Klux Klan. It was the headquarters. Mm. So that's where all of the action took place. And what did that mean? That meant white supremacy, white superiority, black subjugation at the whim of any person whose skin was white. We have to understand what that meant and the terror that was wreaked inside or invoked inside of a person when they saw these symbols.
Oh, yeah.
Now, but now, of course, things have changed. And so what are we going to do? What's the message from this monument here? And so the gentleman that I was talking with, he wanted to get rid of the monument. And I said, well, do you want to get rid of the monument? Or do you want to change the narrative that accompanies this monument? And I asked the gentleman to really think hard and long about the answer that he gave me, because I wanted a thoughtful discourse rather than emotional, sort of back and forth. Mm-hmm. And in the end of our conversation, by the end of our conversation, we were both in agreement that really what we cared about was the narrative, not the monument itself.
Well, and Cynthia, every step of our evolution, and it is an evolution, it's a historical and a cultural evolution throughout history, the idea of having that happen in the history behind it is so that we can grow.
Absolutely.
That we can grow. If you destroy the history, we can't grow.
That's right.
We can't learn lessons. We can't say, this is where we were and this is where we are now.
That's right. That's right. And it's so important for us to have this conversation. You and I are like voluntarists, because we are voluntarily engaging in this conversation. And mm-hmm. I guarantee you that there's millions of people in the United States who also want to lovingly mm-hmm. and respectfully engage in this conversation. Instead, what we're being told is that you're forced to have this conversation, and these are the rules by which you can have this conversation, and we're the ones who are setting the rules. And of course that's going to engender hatred, division, resentment, all of the things that we don't want to happen.
Right. They're counterproductive. They're counterproductive, and they know that. That's the part that's so irritating about all this, Cynthia. You and I can talk, and we have all kinds of friends of every type and ethnicity and color, and we've got friends that literally cover the entire spectrum of humanity, and we can get along just fine. Why do we have to have people constantly telling us what we're supposed to think? That's the part that irritates the crap out of me.
Yes.
We are adults. We're a lot clearer thinking people than an awful lot of the people who are trying to change the dialogue in the wrong direction.
That's right. That's right. And so now where do we go from here, though? I think we have multiple issues that we have to kind of separate out or whatever, because we also have that we've got this issue of this like sort of enforced intentional division making.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's on a lot of different levels, but we also, but we also have an issue of, how can I put it? Maybe, well, I was getting ready to say nationalism versus patriotism. Maybe I'll just say we have an issue of patriotism, because the problem is, in my view, that we have people inside our country who are not patriotic. They don't love our country. And I know that we have some people who are actively working against the interests of the United States. And for some reason, those individuals have been allowed to work their way up to the top of the decision-making pyramid, and they're in charge of the United States, of the state. Mm-hmm. How does something like this happen where enemies of the state, oh, you know what? That reminds me, there's a book by my Malaysian friend. The name of the book is Gates at the Barbarian. Barbarians at the Gates.
Oh, yeah.
Let me see if I can find
it. I've heard of that book, yeah.
Yeah, let me see if I can find it.
Okay. Well, since we're getting into that, Cynthia, one of the things that we're going to be talking about is the election process and how what we see as a way to honest and fair elections. And we will get into that. That's the nice thing about having 2 hours to talk. Although I have to tell you, every time we get on a program together, we could talk for 10 hours and not have enough time to cover it all. But you were a big Trump supporter, not because Trump is perfect, but you recognized that he believed in the United States of America as a free republic. And that he actually tried to do some things to support the Constitution, which is something that you and I both agree with. And you're talking now about what's going on in this country with this, and I don't think there's any question about it, this rigged election. We're facing now a destruction of the best, the last best hope for the world. Because we are a republic, and a republic that believes in rule of law, which means the thing that I hold dearest about being a republic is the fact that we are supposed to protect the rights of the individual and minorities. Minorities. It doesn't matter what that minority is. It may be someone who, believes in that chickens are people. I don't care. But they've got the right to have whatever thoughts they have, as long as they don't impact others, as long as they don't try to destroy others.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
When you get a minute, I've got something I'd like to add to Cynthia's last remarks.
Go ahead, do it right now.
Because this is something that I did. I showed this on my show last night on the Hyperdrive show. And you mentioned about, our educational system. And this is an article that I covered last night, our Prussian model of public schooling controlling the masses. Mm-hmm. To that end, the Prussian educational system sought to take education out of the hands of family and church with 5 key goals in mind. It was to create, 1, obedient workers for the mines, obedient soldiers for the army, well-subordinated civil servants to the government, well-subordinated clerks to industry, and citizens who thought alike about major issues. Mm-hmm. And it goes on to say how, they back in the, I think it was the 1800s, They went over to
Horace
Russia and saw their educational system, and they thought it would be great to bring it over to America. So they brought it over here and started implementing these their system of schooling into the United States. And what you end up with after a few generations of doing this through the school systems and on up. And it's also, you know, affirmative action was very instrumental in doing this too, because they brought people in under the idea of quotas and things like that. Rather than on a person's ability to be able to do the job. And these people have now risen in the corporate structures and things like that. And they're carrying forth this agenda. And they're already, again, starting to push more of that out there, as far as McDonald's just came out and said that they were going to basically penalize managers who did not hire certain quotas of ethnic groups into the McDonald's organization. And if they met these quotas, they would get their bonuses. So you see how this, bringing people in the very beginning, And we've seen how that has failed miserably. Mm-hmm. It hasn't served anybody's best interests, I don't believe.
We used to have a real classical liberal education, but Horace Mann is the one that brought the oppression school into Massachusetts. That's the first public school system was in the state of Massachusetts, and that was about 1815, somewhere in that era. And when he did that, it was exactly as you say. That was the reason they did it, is to create a working class that would be easily controlled. That was what it was all about. But anyway, Cynthia, I don't want to get too far afield here with this, but yeah, we're being taught that our differences are what we need to concentrate on, when in fact, I think what we need to concentrate on is the things that we share together as humanity. And what we share together as humanity is that we need to have survival. We need to have culture that grows and expands and becomes more classically liberal, I guess is the best way to put it. Cynthia, come back in on that comment.
Well, mentioned Horace Mann. I am a child of Horace Mann. And the education that I got from Antioch University, I would say, is definitely not something that takes one's ability to think away, but actually induces a sort of critical analysis of what policies are being put forward and who benefits from those policies, which are legitimate questions to ask. The saying that Antioch University has enshrined or emblazoned on the t-shirts is, wait a minute. So now you're changing. What's going on here? Because I lost my screen. I want to go back to my screen.
Oh, were you sharing? I'm sorry. Okay.
I wasn't sharing. I was just trying to.
Okay.
I was
sorry.
Able to do my screen. Yeah. So I just want your audience to get the quote, which is, "Be ashamed to die until you have won some victory for humanity." Mm-hmm. And it was Antioch College, which is located in Ohio, Yellow Springs, Ohio, that allowed Coretta Scott, at that time she wasn't yet king, to do her her pursuit of education as a field of study at Antioch College. And at Antioch, the importance of her going there was that it was a time of segregation. And so with her studying education, part of the education curriculum requirement was that she had to go and practice teaching at a school. Hmm. Where was she gonna practice teaching at a time of segregation when she wasn't allowed into the school building? And it was Antioch College that facilitated. Now, some people might say, well, we didn't wanna be race mixing. We didn't wanna have all of that. But I think that the United States today is far better and has far more resources at its disposal because it is trying, or at one point was, trying to include the entirety of its population, mm-hmm. rather than offering only a portion of its rewards and resources to only a portion of its population, no matter how talented those that were left out might have been. Mm-hmm. So if you agree that we're stronger when we include more resources, human resources, that we as a country are stronger, then what Horace Mann actually provided was a way for people like me to get an education. And I would have sent my son there. My son went to the law school. Mm-hmm. So these people whose names you can throw out, but there's usually another side.
Oh, there is.
Yep. And then what we have to understand, okay, is what is the other side and what is the context? Mm-hmm. Okay, and so now, my son having graduated from one of the few public interest law schools in the country, because mm-hmm. what is it that most lawyers are associated with? Pushing paper around and getting paid for it.
Mm-hmm. True enough.
And not yep. doing anything to help people.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have an institution whose mission is to help people to think, I also, for my own purposes, I have to credit the Catholic education system in the United States, because at the
Oh, we lost your sound, Cynthia.
Didn't mute myself.
There we go. There we go.
Oh, okay. So from the Catholics taught me to look at my environment and to question everything. They taught me how to do that. And you mentioned the the interaction that I had with Donald Rumsfeld. I credit that to the Catholics, you know, the Catholics, because what is it that they did and they do to this day? They were able to go into, I didn't grow up poor, but I mean, they were able to go into the poorest environments inside the United States. They were the only ones willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the private schools, the segregation academies, weren't going to take Black students, no matter how much money they had to pay for the tuition. So the Catholics, though, were willing to take even the poorest of the population and give them a rock solid education. I credit them for the trouble that I got into as a congressperson, because they taught me how to think and how to question and gave me values too. Those universal values that we all share, you know, human dignity, belief in the truth, try to live a decent life. You know, you want to raise your children to be good, upstanding citizens, honest. Those are the values that I got from home. I'm not going to deny that I got those values at home. And then they were reinforced when I went to school. So what has happened that we've allowed this perverse situation to occur where you are concerned about outcomes? Yes, I'm concerned about outcome, but I'm also concerned about the sort of the income, right? The access to opportunity. So if we have equal access to opportunity, if we can somehow balance that, I can guarantee you that we can find living homeless on the streets, geniuses. Mm-hmm. And you have seen it. You have seen geniuses in the area of music living on the streets. I can give examples. You have seen geniuses living on the streets of people who were so living so much on the edge because of government activities. And I'm talking about government leaders, political authorities sending people off to war. So I have some thoughts from the first song that was played, Give Me One More Last Chance Before You Say We're Through. That was a wonderful song. But then the second song was much more serious, and it's They Can't Take Our Freedom Away. Yes, they can.
They are, yeah.
That's right. Yes, they can. Mm-hmm. And they are. Mm-hmm. And I love the land. So what I need, I really want patriots to understand is that there's another community out there that really loves the land. I'm tied to the United States because when my people were brought over from Africa, they were stripped of their names, stripped of their language, stripped of their religion. And then we had these identities imposed on us. I am Cynthia McKinney. I know no other land than the United States. I am as much a patriot or more, mm-hmm. because of the way I've been treated, my people have been treated.
I agree.
And yet we love this land.
Yeah, I agree. That's an important thing. And if there's a lesson to be learned out of history, I'm going to say a quote, and I can't quote the person that actually came up with it, but I'm going to quote it, so, and you can comment on this. Mm-hmm. Let me get it right. I don't want to screw it up. Bad conditions create strong leaders. Strong leaders, yes. create good conditions. Good conditions create weak leaders. Weak leaders create bad conditions. I mean,
wow.
our strength right. is that's in right. our having things not perfect. I mean, that's our strength.
That's right.
Strong people don't come from having a silver spoon born in their mouth. You know, they That's right. come from bad conditions, and that it makes them stronger, better people because they learn the lessons that history teaches them.
You know,
and
what, Dan?
You're right.
That is brilliant. And I'm going to ask you to send that to me because it's brilliant and it shows mm-hmm. the continuum. And it also is illustrated in my own personal experience, because when I went to Congress, I'm just this little, you know, Southern girl, Black girl from the South. And I'm in this, you know, big hallowed place, and it would be easy to get what's called imposter syndrome. Well, you know, I don't deserve to be here. You know, it would be easy to become inferior in your feelings because of that. But my dad gave me a wonderful lesson. He told me when I was dealing with the Georgia legislative hierarchy, he told me, Cynthia, they put their pants on just like you do. Mm-hmm. And so he was sort of, you know, bulking me up a little bit, although COVID has bulked me up even more, but that's a whole different thing. And so he was getting me ready for that leadership role should I find it. And so my attitude was, yeah, okay, I can learn my stuff. I can learn my stuff, and then I can become a legislator just like the very best of them. I can do that. So it gives you, you know, sort of like a feeling of self-confidence. And from that experience from the Georgia legislature into the Congress, what I learned, though, is that those people who had been given the most were the last ones to fight. Right. They don't fight. They didn't know anything. They certainly weren't street smart. Well, my mom says I'm not street smart too. She says I don't have common sense. I just have book sense. But you know, it's like, okay, there's many different kinds of knowledge. And those people for whom everything has been easy and given, they have a kind of knowledge of how to take. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what about how to fight?
Right.
How to struggle? And I don't mean fist fight. I mean, how to struggle.
Fight for what you believe in. Fight That's for right. what you believe
well,
in.
Well, how to formulate yeah. even a sense of core values mm-hmm. that take you out there in the marketplace and then allow you to articulate those values and defend those values in that marketplace. Mm-hmm. And that's what tough times, that's what it produces.
Mm-hmm. Tough times.
So I love that.
Well, you know, it's funny, but when I was a kid, my dad died when I was really young. And my mother was, I'm not going to go into my whole family history, but my mother had a lot of issues. I actually went out and at 8 years old, I started going downtown to all the bars and stuff and shining shoes so that I could have enough money that I could afford to buy clothes, because my mom, when my dad died, we had nothing. And, and we lived in really humble circumstances. But I take offense when somebody tells me I need to be shining somebody's shoes. I did shine somebody's shoes, and I did it because I needed money, you know.
Yes.
And I grew up that way. That's the way I grew up. And as a result of it, I think I'm a better person for it. It's
that's
not
right.
the easy things in my life that have made me a person, I think, of character. It's the tough times in my life that have made me a person of character. And you're the same way. You're the same way. You recognize that. And that's what a classical liberal education, you talked about the being sent to Catholic schools. My wife is Catholic, and she went to Catholic schools. And so she'll tell you the same thing. They taught people values. They taught people to think classically, which is you decide the difference between right and wrong because you've got a core set of values that tell you what's right and wrong.
That's right.
And that's not what they're teaching today. We've gone from a nation that had classical liberal education to now we're a nation that has, we'll call it indoctrination, because everything they teach in the schools now are what a set of ideologues have created as the educational curriculum, and it's wrong.
You know, I don't know that I'm even qualified to engage in this discussion at a certain level, because I only have one child. I had one son, And I sent him to private schools too. I sent him to private school because I was a product of private schools. And while there was interaction with the children from the public schools, well, our lives took really different turns. And there's more, how can I say, there's more temptation against those values. It's not that it doesn't exist in Catholic school, for sure, because, you know, there was disposable income in the hands of very young teenagers and, you know, sort of a lifestyle that led to a lot of things that promiscuity, drug abuse, those very same things that happen in public schools as well. However, the ability to recover, I believe, in the public school setting is way more difficult. And perhaps because there's less of a safety net in the public school setting than there is for the private schools. But in as much as my son, I can talk to you ad infinitum about what goes on in private schools, I'm an outside observer. But one of the things that one of the more recent observations that I have been forced to make is that I was a teacher for a while, a substitute, you know, just part-time. When I came back, I went out of the country and I married someone who was not a U.S. citizen. And so I went there and when I came back with nothing and but a divorce, and I'm trying to rebuild my life, then I went into the public education system as a temporary, on-call person, mm-hmm. and a teacher. And what I learned from that experience was that teachers in public schools know what societal trends are 10 years before they become a trend. Because in those classrooms, what I saw the prison industrial complex up close. I'll never forget one of the students, it was fourth grade, just, you know, antics from sun up to sundown, always trying to get teachers' attention, negatively, of course. And so I went to him and I asked him, and of course the schools are de facto segregated. So these are Black institutions. The faculty, of course, is not all Black. And I went to this one student and I said, what's really going on with you? And he told me that his mother was in prison and that he lived with his father, who was a drug abuser, in his presence. So this child had experienced by fourth grade something I had never experienced in my life, and I'm 30. Mm-hmm. You know, and so then, of course, that was before the crack epidemic, but then we had crack cocaine, which was created by the United States government. And I need to go back to the song where he says, one of the lines is, I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud to be an American, but I'm not proud of what the United States government has done to its own people and what it has done to people around the world. I've had the good fortune to travel to a lot of places around the world where I have seen firsthand. I was underneath Barack Obama's bombs as they fell on Libya, destroying an important mm-hmm. African engine of growth for the entire continent. Mm-hmm. And so you've got, if you look at regular television, which I don't, but when I go home and I'm with my mom, if I go into the same room with her, I don't have any choice but to look at television or to at least see it in the background as I am communicating important messages with my mom. But what I see in the background, we have, what is it? Towers to tunnels. We've got all of these veteran organizations that are raising money because the veterans have sacrificed limbs mm-hmm. and their well-being for what the United States is today. But I can guarantee you that most of those wars that those young men and women were sent into did not benefit me and my family. They were not for freedom. They did not benefit my next door neighbor, my mother, my neighborhood, my community. They did, however, benefit a few individuals.
The military industrial complex.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, and Dick Cheney and people like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, and so I'm proud to be an American, but I have to add quickly that I recognize that the United States is not perfect mm-hmm. and that the United States has done harm around the world. That
Cynthia,
I want to stop.
I agree. But here's the thing, and I'm going to bring this up because I think it needs to be, I know you would agree with it. It's not the people of the United States. It's not the average person in the United States. Yes. And the reason that I'm proud to be an American is because I know that we have to be the solution. We have to be the ones to take our country back, take it away from these evil bastards, get rid of them, and take it back for the people of the world, because I agree with you. You look at all the wars that we've been involved in, and very, very few of them had anything to do with the American people or with the freedom of the world. Now, occasionally you get a dictator out there. You get Adolf Hitler, somebody like that. That is a problem, but at the same time, there's other ways to deal with things besides killing a whole bunch of people. But keep in mind, you know, I'm an expert on Agenda 21. What has been behind all these wars and all these things that they're doing is that they want to exterminate most of the human population. And what better way to do it than get us involved in a bunch of damn wars?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And so now here's the other thing. And this is where, you know, we've been speaking in generalities and we agree. But when I've never been hunting, so an example I shouldn't give because I don't know what I'm talking about, but I can imagine, right? This is my imagine. And I'm thinking that if I'm engaged in an oppositional struggle, in order for me to prevail, I need to know as much as I possibly can about whoever it is in which I am in opposition, or whoever it is that is in opposition to me. This is a sort of like necessary knowledge.
Sun Tzu.
Well, you know, I'm a student of Sun Tzu. I guess maybe anybody who's alive, because it wasn't just in military. It's not in military strategy that Sun Tzu excels, but it's also in just how one lives one life, you know? He said, know thyself and know thine enemy. He said, know thyself. But then, you know thine enemy, and then, you know, 1,000 battles will be won, or something like that, he said. And so we got to know ourselves, and we got to know who is in opposition to us. If we don't specify, then it's blurred. It's blurred. And so I've got some friends who have become very confrontational because they are very specific in naming the names of the people who are in opposition to us. And I believe that that's an important tactic to adopt, because even the bystanders won't know what's going on. What's that saying? If you get down and act as foolish as the person who's acting foolish, then an onlooker can't tell who the fool is, you know, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So some things have to be defined so that we can know how to proceed. We can't take the country back unless we know who's got it.
Right. And Cynthia, we need to, and you're alluding to this with what you're saying, we need to make sure that we always, always stand on sound ground and on good principles. If we are truth seekers, if we believe in truth, and we are, let's say, good examples of what we believe, then we will always have a little bit of an advantage over our opponents, because they do what they do through deceit.
You're absolutely right. And so now I'm developing, I don't know if I've discussed this with you before or not, but I'm developing a thesis about actually, I shouldn't even say it's mine. Well, it's kind of mine because I came up with it. But then what I learned is that Gilad Atzmon wrote a book called Being in Time. And I wrote the postscript, but it was supposed to be the foreword, but he was doing the book backwards. At least the manuscript that I got and that I read was the book was being written backwards. And so then if the book were written backwards, the postscript wouldn't be the postscript. The postscript would be the foreword. So I was asked to write the foreword. But I labeled it the postscript because the book was being, I was trying to go with the flow of the book. And so then in the actual book, though, it turns out at the end of the book rather than at the beginning of the book. But anyway, Gilad does a very important job, I believe, of exposing who the dividers really are, who the masters of identity politics really are. And not only he exposes who they are, but he also exposes that what they do for themselves is vastly different than what they do for us. And when you say deception, it's all a game of deception.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a game of deception. And that's why we've got to be the truth seekers. We've got to stand on a different plane. And that way, we don't have the confusion of people saying, well, you know, they're both battling over something. Who's the good guy? We need to be very clear about who the good guys are so that we can show how the bad guys really operate.
Exactly. And I think people now are beginning to see how bad. Of course, there are some sheeple who believe in the vaccine. They believe in the mask. They, you know, and they, telling on people who don't, those are the sheeple. Mm-hmm. And I'm somewhat confounded by the sheeple, Dan, and maybe you can help me with this, because lurking in the back of my mind is this feeling that sheeple deserve what they get, because the information, the truthful information, while it may not be broadcast on mainstream radio, corporate or foundation funded radio on the left or the right, or whatever that is, because in my opinion, there is no more left or right anymore, because they've turned things upside down. But what do you do with the sheeple? Do you let them, do you leave them to their willfully ignorant fate? Or do you try to save them? You know, and so I've decided that I will put my truth out there to the extent that I'm allowed to do that. And thank, you know, I have been sanctioned by social media, but I still have a Twitter page. I still have a Facebook page, and I'm going to the others. I have a Gab page, but the Gab hasn't been working for me because it's been so overloaded since people left Twitter. Mm-hmm. But I've been able to get some ideas out there, even though I'm shadow banned and all of the rest, but I can still put some ideas out there, and you are putting ideas out there. So, I mean, it's not like the truth is not available. It's just a little more difficult to find. So now what do we do with these people who choose to not search for the truth and then become victims of the lies? What do you, you know, what's our responsibility to them?
Well, do you have any idea? I do. I because I talk about this all the time. We cannot be responsible for people who don't want to see the truth. But at the same time, we have a responsibility to provide as much truth as we possibly can, because these people are being directed by the other side. They really can't help. A lot of people really can't help that they believe this nonsense, because they've been indoctrinated with this crap for so long that they just cannot see the truth. And the Bible talks about it. The Bible talks about those who will not see. And in truth, our responsibility is still the same. We are to be beacons of light. We are to be truth seekers, freedom seekers. We are to be the people who speak honestly, understanding that we may not be able to reach everybody, but we still have to try. That's okay. The way I see it.
Okay. So then this Connecting the Dots radio show of yours is like a ministry of sorts, a ministry absolutely to those who might still be willfully blind. Mm-hmm. And it's an invitation to come to the altar of truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, okay. And yeah, it's just the way we have to do it, because we have to recognize that most people, if in fact you talk to average people that believe the you know, the mask lies and the vaccines and all this other nonsense, most of them share the same kind of ideas about what freedom is that we do. They just don't get it because they've been indoctrinated. Yeah. And so it is a ministry of sorts. And, you know, we do have some pretty strong Christian religious aspects on this program at times, because I think that's absolutely imperative. You know, if there's anything we can learn, is that truth is very definitely something that we're given the gift of being able to speak, so that we can impart that truth.
Yes. It's a gift from God. It's a gift from God, you know, and we should understand that. We are so lucky that we have gifts that some other people don't have, yes, and we need to do the best job we can of sharing those gifts.
Well, thank you so much for that, because now you kind of ministering to me as well, and I'm remembering that, you know, part of the sort of Catholic teaching was that if you have a talent, it's a sin to waste the talent.
Right, right, right. There are some sins that aren't, they aren't part of necessarily the Ten Commandments, but that's, yes, still, it is, if you have wisdom or if you have vision, you have a responsibility to share that. You really, yes, do. And if, yes, people don't want to hear, that's not, you don't feel bad if they don't want to hear, because you have to understand they've been indoctrinated by people who are truly, truly evil. And, yes, the best way that we can reach them is by example. It really is.
And, you know, that indoctrination, who was that? What was the, you do your show, and we have a conversation, and that's it, mm-hmm, until next week. But imagine the indoctrination that's taking place 24/7, 365 right, days a year.
Right.
It's on the radio, it's on the television, it's in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wherever one would look in a regular kind of sense. And then you, okay, that's the corporate funded. Then you say, okay, well, I know I'm not gonna get the truth there, so I'm gonna go over here to the foundation funded, if you're progressive or liberal, it's, you know, maybe Democracy Now! Or something like that. It's foundation funded though, so it's still, mm-hmm, a line. Mm-hmm. And it's the wrong line, it's the wrong line still. So it's very difficult, but it's out there, and that and those are every day. I mean, people are bombarded with it. So sometimes I feel like I just don't have time, even though I want to continue it. In fact, these last couple of days while I was on travel, I didn't do the Twitter thing, and people actually went to my website, mm-hmm, and told me, hey, I like what you post. What happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I said, okay, well, maybe I need to continue doing what I'm doing. I need to reinforce what I'm doing and don't just sort of give up.
Don't ever give up. No, yeah, don't ever give up. And I, you know, it's funny because what you're saying is really, I dropped my phone somewhere and I have no idea where I dropped it, lost it. But anyway, I was without my phone for about a week and a half, and people were trying to call me, and I usually get quite a few calls, you know, in a given day, mm-hmm, and they couldn't reach me. And I actually had friends that were driving 60 miles up to my house to see if I was okay.
Wow.
What a wonderful thing. I mean, you know, when you That's have right. all these friends that are trying to contact you any way they can, yes, because they're worried that somebody finally got you and shut you up, you know?
Yeah, a la Bill Cooper.
Yeah, a la Bill Cooper, exactly. So yeah, anyway, it was pretty funny. I got a huge kick out of it. But it's flattering because you're important, Cynthia. What you do is so, so important. And you need to understand that you are, you're a beacon for an awful lot of people. And you need to understand how important you really are to the freedom movement.
Well, I it's always kind of hard. When you're doing the work, it's kind of hard to actually step back from the work and make an assessment of the effectiveness within the work, you know, because our work product is not something that we can see. Like if I go out and cut the grass, I can see a beautiful lawn at the end of it. If I, you know, plant flowers when springtime comes, I can see, if I plant bulbs and spring comes, I see flowers. But our work, you're a builder. So you actually see, you construct things. I just found that out. I didn't know you were a builder. And so you see an immediate work product, but when you're trying to build, when you're trying to build intelligentsia, that's something you can't see readily anyway. And you don't know how people are even receiving the information that you're providing. So thanks for saying that and reminding me, it's important work. It's important to do.
Cynthia, you're a builder. You are a builder. Understanding, you are building ideas. You are building minds. You are building people with value. I mean, that's right. That's why Christ was a carpenter. He was a builder.
Yes.
But he built more as a philosopher and as a prophet than he did as a carpenter.
Yeah.
And so keep that in mind. You are what you're building is much more important because you're trying to build a better world.
I'm trying, Dan. I'm trying, and you know, sometimes I think though because you know my mom. You know, I've been slapped around like, okay, so I went on this trip and one gentleman was there who knew my story. When he saw me, he just burst into tears. He gave me a hug and he just wouldn't let go. And he started crying and he whispered into my ear, "Vindication is yours." And, you know, people know that I've suffered and, you know, I couldn't even get a job in the United States. Still can't for that matter. Just recently filled out an application, although, you know, to teach. I can teach children in other countries, but I can't teach children right here in the United States. So that's anyway, crazy. Before we go, I need to get your vision on the election, but I want to say one more thing about my friend from Malaysia who sent me the names of these two books. I put them in the chat here. So I got them now. One, I didn't put the author.
Yeah, the second one, that's that one, Barbarians Inside the Gates. And he's got a kind of an unusual spelling.
It's D-O-N-N. Yeah, D-O-N-N, Dupray. Okay, so the first one is The New Underworld Order by Christopher Story. And the second book is Barbarians Inside the Gates, The Black Book of Bolshevism, Book One by Colonel, he was a military man, U.S. military man, Don de Grand Pré. So now I have no idea what these books are about, but a friend who is a student of U.S. politics in Malaysia has sent these books to me to tell me, if you want to take your country back, this is the way you got to do it. You got to read these books. So I'm going to read them and I'm going to see what they are about.
Well, you know, there's no such thing. Even if you read things that you don't believe, there's no such thing as useless information. If
you know, because it all builds. It's all part of your learning experience. It's all part of, because you are a classically educated liberal.
Yes.
It's all part of our growth. It's a natural
thing. That's right. That's right.
That's kind of why I'm loving this conversation, because the truth is that you and I maybe thought we came from different viewpoints, but in fact, if you look at the world, it's a circle, right?
It's a circle.
The same thing with right and left. They use these names to divide,
yes,
and slice and dice us. But if you take a circle and you understand that it's round, eventually the right and the left come together.
That's right. That's right. And that's where we are. Mm-hmm. So, and our goal, I think, is to bring our country into this place where you and I are. If we could do that, don't you know what a wonderful place the United States would? I mean, can you even begin to imagine the good that we can do around the world?
Yeah, yeah. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, that's what we're told. That's what the Bible teaches. And, you know, one of the things that obviously that they're trying to do is to destroy religions.
Yes.
They want the new religion to be something that's totally foreign to anything in reality. That new religion shows human beings as a plague on the earth. Well, and who's to say if, you know, this is the thing with you know, all the people that they're trying to kill, all the things with abortion and all the people they're trying to kill. Who knows how many Einsteins were in that group that they tried to get rid of, and how much different our world would be if, in fact, I think we should revel in the fact that we've got a lot of people on Earth. We just need to make sure that they understand their value and try to maximize it.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, you see, that's because you're coming from a position of humanity, and they're coming from a position of hatred for humanity. Mm-hmm. I saw something that just shook me to my core, and that was, you know, they're having these library hour transgender, it's not transgender, transsexual library hour where you have men dressed up as women.
Right.
That and I saw one where one of those, it was a man, but he was dressed up as a kind of like a striptease woman, you know,
mm-hmm.
With pantyhose and
And he had snakes coming out of his head. Is that the one you're thinking of?
No, didn't have snakes coming out.
Yeah.
But was sitting in front of a little girl was sitting in front, and this was taunting the little girl. I was just stunned. So we've got our young people who, I mean, what do you do? I mean, you know, anyway, I don't want to be intolerant, but some things you can't accept.
No, there are such things as absolute truth, and we need to make sure that whatever we do, Cynthia, you're good at this. You're as good at this as anybody I've ever seen. If you know that you're speaking the truth, you need to stand your ground.
Stand your ground.
Stand your ground. Right. Don't let these people tell you that north is south and right is wrong and all this crap, because that's how they've gotten away with so much that they have gotten away with, is convincing people that we, you know, there is no such thing as absolute truth. There's a lot of absolute truth.
That's right. And, you know, here's the other thing is that what they want is for us to believe that, well, you know, we're nice people. We don't want to hurt people's feelings. And I don't seek to hurt people's feelings. At the same time, I do know that it is wrong to put a young child, and she was just literally almost crying. She's like maybe 5 or 6 years old. And she's, because she doesn't understand, this thing is crawling on the floor, coming toward her, and I know she couldn't, but I'm wondering what kind of parents does this little girl have to even allow her to be subjected to this kind of taunting in the first place, but then secondly, to take her to such an event or not pull her out. And so there's something terribly wrong. Now, what happened after that was you had a I think the transsexuals are the ones that dress differently, and the transgenders are the ones that
mutilate their body. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Although, if I were to look at the definition, technically, I think technically the transsexual is the one that damages the body or changes the body. And the transgender is the one who has the, what we would call gender dysphoria, where the gender is, you know, their gender role is confused. But anyway, so that terminology seems to be a little bit backwards. But anyway, we had one of those persons from that community say, this is nothing more than pedophilia. Mm-hmm. And so then we looked at it at, you know, you can look at it at a, in a vastly, is this recruitment? Mm-hmm. Is this recruitment that's being allowed to take place in public libraries in our country? And it was being actively promoted? Recruitment for what? So when I said earlier that classroom teachers are 10 years ahead of the curve, whatever is going on in that classroom, the teacher knows about it. And the teacher should be the sentinel. Like we have immune cells or cells in our body that are for the constitute the immune system. And they are sentinels at the watch for anything that's not supposed to be there. And our teachers are like that,
They should be like that.
But you know what? So when that little boy told me his mom was in prison, his dad is a drug user, I reached down and I gave that boy a hug. I hugged him like I meant it. Mm-hmm. I hugged him like I wanted him to know that I care. And this, but you know, teachers can't even hug the kids. I was warned, you know, teachers can't hug the kids.
That's probably why you're not a teacher, is because, no, seriously, you care. You care about these kids. Frankly, the teachers' colleges are not turning out the best of the best. They're turning out a group of people who are easily led, and you're not one of those people. That's probably why you have trouble finding work in the teaching community.
That's right. Yeah. And it's just, it goes back to what, to that chart that Thumper had up there about the indoctrination. And I remember it was a movie, I think it was German, from like about 1929-ish. Can't remember the name of it, but it was about workers well, it was the dehumanization of labor, so that the workers didn't have faces. The workers had labor. The workers were labor. And that's all that they were. They weren't human beings. They weren't human beings that sweated when it was hot, got tired when there was too much work. They were laborers, and it was either perform the job for the 12 hours that you're there or get shot. And you think about the pursuit of education. Yes, I want my students to be able to get jobs when they graduate, but I want my students to just be lifelong learners, always questioning everything and being aware.
Amen.
So I went and I got my PhD. I went back to school, and I ended up at Antioch, which was a very good fit for me. And got my PhD, and how one manages or leads change, because we're buffeted by change in our personal lives, in our workplaces, our work lives, our professional lives. And how do you cope with that? How do even organizations cope with change? What we're talking about when we say take our country back, what are the ingredients that we need in order to lead and manage this change? Because I can guarantee you that SARS coronavirus 2 is a change project for somebody who decided that my bloodstream is now their battlefield, their playground. So the knowledge that I gained, well, it cost me $138,000 in student loans. How is it that the pursuit of knowledge puts you in the penury house, in the pauper's house? Because you want knowledge. You want to become a better human being, a better individual. And so you pay for it by becoming poor.
You know, but Cynthia, part of the cause of that is that our institutions have told us that you have to have their piece of paper that they give us to be qualified to be an intellectual or to be a smart person, when in fact the reality is that if you go out and read 1,000 books, you probably know 100 times more than some of the people who claim to be the smartest people.
Well, what I have learned is that you can become very knowledgeable about very little. You ask a medical doctor about vitamins and nutrition. They can tell you everything about how the cells regenerate and how they kill themselves, and how tumor cells accumulate and what it takes, but they can't tell you how to prevent that cell from accumulating or agglutinating and becoming a tumor. Can't tell you that, because that's not, and so they know everything about a very, very pinpointed, and really the people, like you say, I'm telling you, I have seen, I used to go out on every Thursday night, well, not night, but in the evening, I would go out with my local masjid and feed the homeless people in the city of Atlanta every Thursday, did it for years. And until the city of Atlanta said we couldn't use the parking lot any longer. Can you imagine?
Wow.
They said, we can't. And it was through that experience that I learned that so many of the homeless are people whose brains have been addled from the wars that they've been forced to fight in.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I went to the veterans, I went to the VA, and I said, you're going to get these people off the street. That's your jurisdiction. You're going to get them off the street. And they, you know, I was accused of meddling. But I just ask people to do the job that they're being paid to do. If the veterans are on the streets and we have homes to house them and medication to treat them, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I demanded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's so sad that we can send people off to war to put their lives in jeopardy, but not only that, the people that they're up against, and understanding that so many of these wars are bankers' wars, industrialist wars, they're money makers. And all I can say is it's a tragedy. Then we have the people, the homeless, and as you say, the people, the veterans that have all the mental issues and everything else as a result of this, and we can't treat them right.
I know.
We've got a screwed up mess. Well,
we have a screwed up mess. And then you remember under the Bush administration, they went to the court and told the court that the people who made the promise of lifetime health care weren't authorized to make the promise. So they tried to get out of it. This is mm-hmm. unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And so this will get us into, I'll take the last 10 minutes.
We got to get into the elections.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So what I have learned, or this is an observation that maybe you can sort of help me expound on. And that is that we talked about representation. Well, let me sort of go back and say, Dr. King said that the Negro not only was in pursuit of the right to vote, but how did he put it? Not just the right to vote, but the right, but sort of what that, this is a paraphrase now, what came as a result of the right to vote. So it's not just that you go in there and pull a lever. It's that what comes after you go in there and pull the lever. Now, here's my contribution to that thought. That when you go in there and you fight for the right to go in there and pull the lever, and that's Black people, that was women before that, that was, all of those males who were not landowners at the beginning of the founding of the United States. So these various population segments that were left out, eventually the struggle was to include them. And so that something that comes after you struggle for the right to vote is representation in my mind. Mm-hmm. That now I question the validity of the entire notion of indirect democracy, which is what a republic is, but I don't want to go into that at this point. We struggle for the right to representation in our republic. Mm-hmm. And what we are discovering is that the representation that we thought we had isn't representation at all. Mm-hmm. That we voted for a representative, this is what I used to say when I was in Congress is that we voted for a representative, but we didn't get representation. Mm-hmm. And so now that we're learning that not only was the ability to get representation rigged, but even the ability to cast the vote was also rigged. Mm-hmm. So my question for you is, what does an unrigged electoral system or election system or system of election administration, what does an unrigged one look like? What does an election administration that has integrity, what does that look like to you?
Okay, well, that's a good, easy question. At the same time, it's going to take a few minutes. I'm glad we should have started this earlier, but that's okay. We'll maybe run into a new program. What I think an unrigged representative election should look like, we've got to go back to paper ballots. We've got to go back to completely uncomputerized or non-computerized voting. We need to go back to counting all of the votes at a precinct level, like was originally intended. And we need people to do a strictly hand count. And we need to have people present a legitimate ID. I mean, you got to have an ID to get on an airplane. You've got to have an ID to go anywhere. You've got to have an ID to do anything. We need to make sure that our voters are legitimate voters, and we need to hand count everything. And if we do that, now there's other things that are going on in the background. There's a movement. As a matter of fact, I'm going to a meeting on Thursday about this. Originally, our system of government was meant to be no more than 50,000 people represented by a congressperson. 50,000 people. Okay, if we did that today, we would have somewhere close to 5,000 representatives in Congress. We need to get back to a government that is truly grassroots from the bottom up represented, and that the communities that are represented by this ground up grassroots movement have the power to control local decisions. That's what we need. And I know that's a quick answer, and we need to get into a further discussion about this. I'd love it, Cynthia. Anytime you can, you want to do this again, let's just do it, and we'll talk about that whole process. But obviously, the system is rigged now because the more we get away from legitimate identification of voters and the counting of votes. It's like Joe Stalin said, I care not who casts the votes. I care who counts the votes. And that's what this whole rigged electronic election was all about. I mean, we saw evidence of that everywhere. And so if we hand count everything, I think we'll go a long way toward getting back to a representative government. And think about this. We talk about different minorities and different groups. What is the best government, truthfully? It's that's the closest to the people that are represented. And so if we need 5,000 Congress people and they don't go to Washington, D.C., they stay in their own district and they're responsible to be in their own district, can you imagine how much better that would be?
Well, that's pretty much says it all for me. And so then we're ending right on time. That's a great way for me to sort of introduce your comments actually in this film that I'm going to do because I want people to think I'm asking a wide cross-section section of people just that very similar, that simple question. And then, and I, what I suspect is that we'll get similar answers from across the political spectrum. That's what my suspicion is.
Yeah, no, I think you very well could, but obviously our system of government was always meant to be the most representative by being the closest to the people. And that's exactly what they've turned on their head. They've taken our very representative government and now they're talking regional governments that are not even, they're non-elected people, they're appointed.
That's like the EU. So, you know, and we can't do that. People are trying to exit from the EU for that very similar reason. They were sold a bill of goods. What do you call it? A pig in a poke or whatever. And they didn't get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they didn't. And now they're truly regretting the fact. That's what Brexit was all about. That's why Denmark and other countries are actually saying, wait a minute, we're getting something that we didn't agree to. And
that's right.
So it we've got to have truly representative government, Cynthia. And frankly, that's the best government that represents the people. And it doesn't matter your color, anything. It represents you because it's closest to you. And I'll tell you what, I'd love it if our Congress people were limited to 50,000 people and they had to live in the communities that they represent. You don't think we'd have a much better system of government? We'd have a great system of government.
I think we would. Well, I'm an advocate of direct democracy. So, you know, this is... talk right down my alley. We don't need what we have now. And what we have now is actually a threat.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
To every one of us. Okay. Well, anyway, it's been 2 hours. And...
Yeah. I have to thank you so much. I always enjoy this so much. I mean, you've become a good friend over the last number of years because we really do share an awful lot of the same passions for the good of our country and the good of our people.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks, Thumper, for the, the visual aids.
My pleasure. And you're welcome back here at Patriot Soapbox anytime. Thank you so much. Wonderful.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much. And I see the ladies are ready to go. So Nurse Nat, welcome. And we'll look forward to seeing your program.